You ever have one of those moments in law school where you're like, wait a minute, even the stuff that seems basic can get super complicated?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Like property rights, you know? On the surface, it seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
But then, what about when you start thinking about individual freedoms, like a tenant's right to have guests over? It gets kind of tricky, right?
Definitely.
That's exactly what we're going to dive into today.
Nice.
Can a landlord actually ban someone from coming onto the property, even if that person is a guest of a tenant?
Interesting.
Especially when you throw in law enforcement and subsidized housing, it's a bit of a legal puzzle,
For
right?
sure.
But these aren't just hypotheticals. I mean, this stuff has real consequences.
Yeah.
So today we're going to unpack a really interesting case from Florida, LDL v. State from 1990, and we're going to see if we can find some answers to these questions.
Sounds good.
So give us the rundown of the case. What are we dealing with here?
So in LDL v. State, it's a decision from the Florida District Court of Appeals,
Okay.
November 6, 1990, and basically we've got a juvenile, LDL, who's been charged with trespassing.
Okay.
And the reason he was told to stay off the property of Griffin Heights Apartments.
Okay.
It's a low-rent, federally subsidized housing complex in Tallahassee.
Gotcha.
And the thing that I think is so interesting about this is the Tallahassee Police Department is also involved. They had this agreement with the complex authorizing them to basically issue trespass warnings to people that they considered not residents, hanging out, loitering, stuff like that.
All right, so we've got this kind of blanket authority given to the police by the property manager.
Right.
Now, here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
LDL's defense is not that he wasn't there, but that he was there to visit tenants.
Okay.
Specifically, his brother, his grandmother, and a friend, all who lived at Griffin Heights.
Interesting.
So that really changes the situation, doesn't it? I mean, it begs the question, does the property manager, by trying to exclude someone through the police, does that outweigh a tenant's right to have guests,
Right.
especially in common areas?
Yeah, that's the central question here.
It is.
And for you, our listener, especially if you're a law student, this case is super relevant
Why is that?
because it digs into some really, really important legal concepts. We're talking property law, the limits of ownership, what that even means, criminal laws, specifically trespass.
Right.
Then you've got tenants' rights. That's huge in actual practice. And then you add on top of that the fact that it's federally subsidized housing. That might have its own specific regulations, but in this case, the core legal principles, they really come from basic landlord-tenant law and understanding, what rights a tenant has under their lease.
Right.
So looking at LDL, you get this real example of how all those things connect and the super important role lease agreements play in all of this.
So let's get a good picture in our minds of what this place is like. Griffin Heights Apartments, federally subsidized, low-income housing.
Right.
That feels like a pretty important detail. It suggests some level of public interest, maybe even more oversight. And you've got this agreement with the Tallahassee PD, trespass warnings for non-residents loitering. It seems like they're being pretty proactive, maybe even kind of strict, about managing this property. And we also know LDL had gotten a warning before this.
Yeah, and that earlier warning is crucial
Right.
because when they saw him again, it wasn't like it was the first time,
Exactly.
That earlier warning probably had a big impact on their decision to arrest him,
Right.
then charge him with trespasses. From their point of view, they're just following the rules set by the management, which they were allowed to enforce.
Okay, but then you have LDL's side of the story. He wasn't just wandering around. He actually had reasons for being there. He said he was visiting his brother, who was a tenant, and he wasn't alone in saying this.
Right.
He also said that he was there to see his grandmother and a friend, both of whom lived there. And importantly, it's not just hearsay.
Right.
There's actual evidence to back him up.
Exactly. Yeah. The mother of his friend, she testified in court, confirmed that he was allowed to be there to visit. That testimony is a big deal because it directly challenges a key part of the trespass charge.
Right.
Being on the property without permission, you have this head-to-head clash of evidence, the police enforcing this overall ban versus this specific invitation from the tenants themselves.
And so what happened at the trial court? It didn't go his way, did it?
No, not initially.
He was found guilty of trespass after warning, even placed on community control.
Right.
That's a pretty serious consequence, especially for just being somewhere where he knew people.
Yeah.
It seems like the trial court maybe put more emphasis on the landlord's ban than the tenant's rights.
Yeah, it raises some questions about whether the trial court really balanced those rights correctly,
It
and
does.
that's what pushed it to the appellate level.
Okay.
So despite him saying he was visiting and having that backup testimony, he's still found guilty at the first level.
Right.
What made them appeal?
Right.
I mean, what was behind that initial conviction?
So the case goes up to the Florida District Court of Appeal, the first district.
Right.
What was the main legal question they're trying to answer? Can this trespass conviction hold up, given that LDL is saying, look, I was an invited guest. It's not just about him being there, it's why he was there.
Exactly. The question isn't about his presence, but the reason for it.
Right.
Did that reason mean he wasn't trespassing?
Exactly.
So the way it went was pretty standard trial court conviction, community control. Then they appealed. The appellate court's job, they have to review the trial court's decision.
Right.
See if any legal errors were made.
Okay.
And in this instance, they're focusing on, did the judge correctly apply trespass law, considering this whole idea that LDL might have been a guest?
So what was the appellate court's reasoning? What were the key legal principles that led them to overturn that trial court decision?
Okay, so their reasoning boiled down to a few big legal points. First off, a landlord usually doesn't have the right to stop people who are invited by a tenant from coming onto the property. And this right isn't just for the tenant's own apartment, it covers common areas too. They specifically said, and this is a key quote, a landlord generally does not have the right to deny entry to persons a tenant has invited to come onto his property. This law also applies to the common areas of the premises.
So that's pretty clear. Unless it's specified in the lease agreement, the tenant's invitation is permission to be there.
Yeah.
What else?
Another really important thing. There was absolutely no evidence of any kind of lease restriction.
Right.
Nothing saying the tenants at Griffin Heights couldn't have visitors.
Okay.
Without something like that in the lease, the tenant's right to have guests stands.
And that ties right into the burden of proof in a criminal case, doesn't it? The state has to prove each part of the crime beyond a reasonable doubt. So how does LDL's story about visiting fit into that?
Exactly. So they decided that his statement, that he was there to visit his brother, grandmother, and friend, that counts as what's called a reasonable hypothesis of innocence.
Okay, break that down for us. What does reasonable hypothesis of innocence really mean in practice?
Basically, it means he gave a reason for being there that, if true, would mean no crime was committed.
Gotcha.
So now the state has to prove that explanation wrong. And the court pointed out, even the trial judge himself wasn't totally sure if LDL was there without being invited.
Right.
Since the state couldn't definitively prove that he wasn't invited by a tenant, they haven't met their burden of proof.
So the invitation from the tenant essentially created reasonable doubt.
Right.
What about the specific elements of the trespass law itself?
Right, Florida Statute 810.09.
Right.
So they went through those elements. Usually it involved being on someone else's property, knowing you shouldn't be, after being told not to. Now, it was clear he'd gotten that warning from the police, but that crucial part, being there without authorization, that wasn't so clear. They decided that permission from a tenant to their guest basically cancels out the landlord's general ban.
Right.
So if he really was a guest, then being there wasn't without authorization, legally speaking.
So the big takeaway is that a landlord can't just decide who's allowed and who's not if those people are invited by a tenant, at least not without having that rule written into the lease agreement.
Exactly. And that's a pretty significant limitation on the property owner's control, especially in a multi-unit building.
Absolutely.
The ruling really makes it clear that the lease agreement is the key to figuring out the rights and duties of landlords and tenants. Without specific rules in the lease, the tenant's right to have guests is strong.
Very strong.
It can even override a general trespass warning that came from the landlord.
Okay.
We also see here some notes about concurring and dissenting opinions. Judge Irvin concurred.
Okay.
So he agreed with the outcome, the reasoning, no additional thoughts. But Judge Nimmons dissented.
Oh, interesting.
Unfortunately, we don't have the specifics of that dissent.
Yeah.
But, you know, thinking about the context, can we maybe guess at what he might have disagreed with?
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe Judge Nimmons focused on the property owner's side, especially security concerns, you know.
Right.
With subsidized housing, sometimes there's a lot of worry about keeping things safe, stopping unwanted activity. Maybe he thought landlords should have more power to restrict people who don't live there to protect everyone living there.
Right.
Even if those restrictions aren't spelled out super clearly in the lease, that'd be a different perspective, putting more weight on the landlord's responsibility for the whole complex's safety.
It would, and that kind of leads us into some bigger implications of this ruling. It definitely has a ripple effect on property law in Florida. How would you sum up its significance?
The biggest impact, I think, is that it tells us landlords can't just use broad trespass warnings from the police to manage guests in their apartments. They have to use the lease agreement, whatever's specifically written there, to set any limits on a tenant's right to have guests. Also, it establishes pretty firmly that these tenant rights apply to common areas as well, not just the apartment itself.
Right.
This gives tenants important protection and clarifies just how much control a landlord really has over who can be on the property.
Right.
Which is, you know, limited.
It raises interesting policy questions, too. You know, there's this push and pull between a tenant's choice, who they want to have around, and the owner's desire to keep the place safe and secure for everyone.
For sure, yeah.
And you mentioned subsidized housing, where there might be even more people and different safety concerns.
Exactly. It makes you wonder if landlords in places with maybe higher crime rates should have more freedom to restrict who comes and goes. But like we saw in this court case, Florida law, unless the lease says otherwise, really leans towards the tenant's rights to invite guests.
Right.
So it's a choice, prioritizing the tenant's autonomy, unless it's spelled out differently in the lease.
So for our listeners out there who are studying law, what are some practical takeaways from LDLV State? What should they remember as they go into their legal careers?
Two key things. One, in any trespass case involving an apartment or a house, the very first thing you got to do is check the lease agreement, see what's said about guests, what limits there are, if any. Two, never forget that in a criminal case, the state has to disprove any reasonable defense. And the defendant saying they were invited, that's a prime example of a reasonable hypothesis of innocence.
And the state has to prove that that's not the case.
Exactly.
Wow, this has been a really fascinating deep dive into LDLV State.
Yeah.
It's amazing how a seemingly straightforward trespass case can lead to so many complex legal issues. Really makes you think about the balance between individual rights and property ownership.
Absolutely.
So here's a final thought for you, our listener. Could the principles we've talked about in LDL apply to more modern situations?
Ooh, good question.
Like, what about those short-term rentals, Airbnb and VRBO and all that?
Yeah, good point.
Or even things like ride-sharing services like Uber or food delivery drivers picking up or dropping off at an apartment complex. When does a guest become just someone passing through, and how far does a tenant's right to have guests extend in those situations?
That's a really interesting point.
Assuming, of course, the lease doesn't directly say they can't. It's something to ponder as you continue your legal studies.
Yeah, definitely. And I really encourage you to explore this more, do some research, see how LDLV State influenced later housing laws and tenant rights in Florida. Understanding how these important cases continue to shape the law is so important for any future lawyer.
Really is.
For sure.
So as you all embark on your legal careers, consider this. Where exactly does the right to control your property end and the freedom to invite your community begin? Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
Thanks for having me.